welcome to another edition of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 7.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast, which you can now find on Spotify. I'm AD Packham, and we are hunting down the devil, twice, in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a good week on Planet Albion. Last Sunday's 3-0 win at Newcastle saw us secure our first 3 points of the season, and yet more plaudits for the effervescent Tariq Lamptey. And then on Wednesday, we progressed through to the fourth round of the League Cup after winning at Preston for the first time ever to set up a home tie with Manchester United next week, who we also face in the league today. Better the devil you know, eh? In other news, we say goodbye to another one of our promotion heroes as Dale Stevens heads to Burnley on a 2-year deal in a bid to get more game time as the Potter revolution continues. Also, with the infection rates rising sharply, the government pulled the plug on fans returning next month. Joining me today to discuss all this and more is, of course, Alan Wes, and we're delighted to welcome back the Argus football correspondent, Brian Owen. Welcome back, Brian.
Hi, Brian. Thank you, AD. Hi, Alan. Hope you're all okay.
Good to see you. Appreciate you being here. Well, we'll just tell people that because we can't do the radio studio stuff live anymore until such time as lockdown finishes, we have to do this sort of thing on usually a Friday evening. And we're doing this bang on deadline when, Brian's actually sort of... we've just been watching him on Zoom, and he looks like Rolf from The Muppets, where he's at the keyboard, looks up, I'll be Animal from you can be Dr. Teeth, AD.
Well, absolutely. But Brian, I mean, obviously last time, it wasn't the last time you've been on a few times since then.
Yeah. But
we had a breaking news story with a signing. Obviously, it's not deadline day today, so we haven't got that. But you're not doing any flight tracking or anything like that today?
No, it's been suggested. Somebody else can have a go at that. Yeah, that was Tariq Lamptey, wasn't it? So that was quite a... That was a good omen, actually. So,
where's he flying him from?
I don't know where he's flying from, but it was during the show. That was confirmed. We got the announcement during the show
on the 31st
of January.
Nobody knew anything. No one knew that was going to happen at all, did they? But let's start though, Brian. Continuation of the empty stadiums. It's something which. It's very, very frustrating. Obviously, we understand the reasons why the infection rates are rising, but it's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, especially when you had that glimmer, that light at the end of the tunnel, if you like, it looked like Brighton had done everything that they certainly could to prove that there was a possibility of fans coming back. We know how successful that game was, the Chelsea game. And then it's sort of stepped backwards. I mean, I think the only hope, I suppose, after the bad news is that the guidance seems to be so changed so much that maybe it'll all change again. But of course, it's a huge setback. All you can say is Brighton are doing all they can to lead the efforts to try and get fans back. But there's obviously the health issues as well, which you can't ignore.
And this comes hot on the tails of the EFL pilot scheme last week, where we saw several clubs up and down the country allow 1,000 fans into the stadiums. And again, that all went very, very well. So it's just another kick on the team.
Therein lies a point, AD, doesn't it? I mean, we had 1,000 tests at the EFL, and I think it's probably 1,000 was a fair number, because if you're going to have that modelling across the Football League, Sunderland have probably got... From the top of my head, I think probably Sunderland have got the biggest stadium in the Football League, and someone like Crawley, or maybe even, I don't know, Salford may have one of the smallest. So 1,000 at the stadium alone is going to be slightly ridiculous. But the point would always be is that 1,000 surely works. It's all okay. I mean, if you're talking about, the stuff that you have to be in a shop, to be in a pub, to be... out and about. I mean, you can't have people sort of, racked indoors all the time. So, we know that 2,500 works at the stadium okay. So probably some of the bigger grounds, you could go to 5,000, 10,000 even possibly. And it's going to be a sliding scale. But the thing that actually gets to me, and I am one who is obviously, still concerned about the science of how this is all working, is that I cannot see why the tests themselves must be suspended. I know that the whole notion of you know, we're not going to open up the stadiums before October the 1st. I get that. And this thing of, you know, the new set of rules lasting for 6 months means the stadiums will be empty themselves for 6 months. Again, I can't necessarily see that. It depends on how the numbers go. But what I don't get is why, if it works okay, you know, in that sort of vast space of what 2,500 people looks like in an arena of 30,000, why at the least the tests can't continue on a low-level basis.
And Brian?
I think the hope was that the international break would be a key juncture in that there's a break in the season, obviously. There's time to look at the figures from schools opening, universities opening, the test events that were all going on. And now that for Brighton, that would have then meant hopefully getting people in for the West Brom game late in October. Is it 24th, 25th, something like that? I suppose the key thing with your numbers is if you look at stadiums, it's not sitting in the stadium is the easy part of it. It's, you know, it's all your... locations, your all the different sort of network, all the infrastructure around there. I suppose that's what you've got to look out for. Mm. It's still, you know, it's still 2,000, 3,000, whatever, 5,000 people in one place at one time. That's still getting them in and out is another factor. And is it worth it on some of these? Sure, Crawley, I suppose 1,000 is half of their normal gate, but others is it financially worth it to open up and get that amount of people into the stadium for the cost involved? But but just disappointing, isn't it? Still empty.
Again, talking about sliding scales. Now, I'm thinking you mentioned Crawley, obviously, which is what I've mentioned because it's one of the smaller football league clubs. But obviously, you know, Adi and I have on occasion previously gone to, say, Worthing. Yeah. I think it's got a capacity of about 4,000, but regularly get about 1,000. Now, and social distancing is probably fairly easy. It's actually, in fact, it's very easy there. So even if they set a limit of 750, and this is what's going on now. The Premier League is one thing, but it's the lower league clubs and the sort of the semi-pro clubs, and I'm using Worthing as an example, Tier 7 club. They're the ones that need the fans in sooner rather than later. And I think that they could probably allow 500 in, 400, 500, 600, whatever it might be, and still be socially distanced. I'll give you a for instance.
They are still allowed to. Worthing, they're not allowed to play games at home at the moment because of...
Because their pitch issue. Pitch
and their stadium improvements. But they're away at Lewis on Tuesday night.
What's Lewis's capacity?
I've got no idea.
Normally 2,000 when it's full.
Something like that. But I mean, they've limited the ticket only, and they've limited the tickets to 450. So...
Okay, that probably would work in that case. I mean, like, for instance, Adi and I last Saturday were at the inaugural game of Southwark 1882 Football Club. I mean, it was about 200 people there. It was park football, but it was great to see the resurrection of a Phoenix club. But the point is that, you know, so long as people follow the rules, and the vast majority, well, a lot of people did socially distance, a lot of people did do their masks and what have you, it is doable. I'm not saying get everyone back in, and everything does need to be looked at. But to have a blanket ban, really, is that necessary? I question it. Love to see. I wish we got told the science of knowing where the blanket ban comes from.
But I mean, we don't know the answers at the moment. We can only speculate. But it's a shame. And again, it's for the clubs. I mean, at top level with the Premier League clubs, yes, it does make a massive difference to budgets and things like that. But
Did you hear specifically anything, Brian, from the club after the Chelsea game? I mean, they might have said one or two things in the press, but did you hear anything saying how they thought it went?
Yeah, I think they thought it went particularly well. And then they submitted, as we understand, more information, more pictures, more evidence when it started to look like things weren't... I'm trying to remember at what stage it was, but when the news was less promising, so... There was little things like kids not having ID, you know, you can't get ID off a young kid, and there was little bits and pieces like that. But they honestly,
you know, kids, they all want a beer.
But they thought it went particularly well, and I think it's getting more and more urgent. I mean, there's politely issued sort of statements about how urgent it is, but if you read between the lines, I compared it to when Chris Hughton was angry in a press conference. He might be very restrained and civilized and diplomatic in the way he talks, but if you look at the way it's delivered, you know, there's anger there. And I think that was the same with the statement that came from various governing bodies, what, 10 days ago or so, even for the latest setback. But we'll see, these things change, don't they? They do.
Absolutely, like I said,
we don't have the answers to all that, and we don't really know what's going on.
What has been consistent is the inconsistency.
But one thing we do know is that we went to Newcastle last Sunday, and didn't we play well? It was... Brian, can you remember a better away performance?
No, funnily enough, no. And I also had the flying start, which was... And not only the flying start, but the second goal, which is key, because I think Graham Potter teams have started games really well, gone 1-0 up, looked good, and then not really built on it. Aston Villa away last season was obviously a great example, but there were more. But I can't remember. And even when you think back to ones which were as emphatic, it's at a lower level. So can you compare... winning 3-0 at Peterborough? Can you compare 3-0 at Huddersfield with Jake Robinson hat-trick or something? But this is like high level. And also, I think, you know, afterwards suggestions, well, Newcastle weren't good on the day, obviously, and they weren't very well set up, as it turns out. But I don't think before the game people were saying that. I think it's easy to say afterwards. But it looked like, you know, a tough match away to a team who started the season well and ended last season quite well.
Confidence amongst the Newcastle faithful was pretty high after winning the first game of the season up at West Ham the week before. So, you know, they were confident, they went into it, and everyone thought that it's a hashtag teams like Brighton thing, isn't it?
But what you've got, AD, is you've got someone like Graham Potter and his team, and who is noted, Graham Potter is noted for sort of like certain levels of innovation. I mean, the number of certainly co-commentators who are ex-pros that say how pleasing Brighton are on the eye. You know, they see a new type of manager. It's not as though he's a new kid on the block that's, you know, come up with these whizzo ideas, but he sees it. And then you see that against Steve Bruce, who is considered, rightly or wrongly, a bit of an old school sort of dinosaur. I mean, I think it's a little unfair, but... the point is that Potter had done his own work, done the number that he needed to, and Newcastle, and I think, you know, it's not taking anything away from Brighton. God, I sound like a Sky commentator now. Not taking anything away from Brighton, but Potter did a number on Newcastle, because 3-0 looked comfortable. It's not as though we deserved to get 5, 6 and 7. It's because we weren't really rattling their goal. But from minute 1 to minute 90, we were largely in control of that game, even when they had their periods of attacking Newcastle. We still didn't look particularly breachable.
Well, you say that, Al, that we weren't really peppering their goal, but we had 13 shots in the game, 6 of which were on target, which would suggest otherwise.
Well, 6 on target is one every 15 minutes.
So it's, you know, I mean, it was, the stats from the game were pretty impressive, but we'll come to that in a bit. But I mean, we'll start with the team using the way Connolly coming in for Adam Lallana, who was only fit enough for the bench. Now, we often talk about fast starts, and this is properly rapid, as is Tarik Lamptey, who absolutely bore them a new one. Brian, talk to me about Tarik Lamptey.
Well, it was just from the off, wasn't it? And you couldn't, it was almost like a comic strip, sort of Royal Rovers type, where this player just does everything. He attacks, he defends, I suppose he probably made a misjudgment to let Wilson through on that one occasion. He recovered with a left-footed sliding tackle. I was actually sitting right above that part of the pitch, that wing. You could see the spaces, and he was well found. I think Ben White slid him in on one occasion. And obviously with the left-back Lewis being dragged out, it was just Saint-Maximin versus Lamptey. And I think the great thing of that is I've seen people saying, can you remember an attacking player causing an opposing defender so many problems? But he didn't only do that. He turned the tables in that it was supposed to be Saint-Maximin who was causing him problems. So he was converted not a level into a plus, but a minus into a plus. And I mean, there was one move even before the penalty, which it was a low cross and somebody cleared. So, I mean, what that was the thing as well, wasn't it? It was the two goals. They actually put the chances away. It was the cutting edge, because you said the stats were good, but they were actually better last season when they drew 0-0. They actually had more goal attempts, they had more possession.
Really?
0-0 draw, yeah. And they went agonisingly close, of course. Aaron Connolly got the ball 9/10 of the way over the line before.
Oh, yes.
Leah.
Al-Zati had a goal ruled out.
He was like a step offside, whereas Trossard was a step onside. There was a... Mope missed a one-on-one, whereas this time he put that one away, past Darlow. So they are what they call the fine margins. But I can't remember. I didn't see the West Ham game that was a 3-0, but I can't remember just a constant control. And the other thing I mentioned, there was the one moment when they weren't in control when Callum Wilson should have scored. And yeah. I thought the response to that was really good. And again, you wonder what would have happened if the fans had been getting behind Newcastle at that point.
But well, they have been getting behind them or getting on top of them by this time.
I'd have loved to have seen the reaction at 0-2, because even last season at 0-0, when Newcastle kept having the ball nicked off them by the Brighton pressing, there was a lot of... And the Newcastle fans are brilliant. It takes very little to make them very loud. But they can also get impatient. And you just wonder at 2-0, what on earth would that stadium have been like? I was wondering that as I sat there. But I could hear the comments, you know, from the media around me. And they're just so impressed with Brighton and surprised, I have to say.
I mean, I saw various comments after the game that said, the stadium's empty and I can still hear them being booed off. It was particularly bad. Obviously, Tarek Lamptey did tie Sir Maximin in knots. I mean, Sir Maximin is a player who I think is brilliant as well. So, and he, you know, he just, it was just such a clumsy challenge. But Neil Morpoy stepped up to, for the first time since his miss at Leicester, to file home the penalty. I still not confident with him as a penalty taker. I'd like to see, I don't think he will be the penalty taker come the end of the season, let's put it that way.
He doesn't take good penalties, does he?
No, Ada, you say the first. Did you say the first time he froze from opener on my screen since Leicester? Because it was actually
his first penalty's missed
since it was the first time since Chelsea,
the first time,
which was also saved.
Oh yes, in the friendly.
Yeah. So
yeah, all right.
I think that makes your point even more. It was slightly, and it was quite a long delay as well, waiting for him to take it. So. Yeah. It was a slightly nervous moment, a big moment for him. But obviously, Pascal Gross took the one who I'm not totally convinced by was a penalty taker either. He wasn't on the pitch. McAllister, another candidate, he wasn't. So,
well, in the friendly, they were actually arguing over it. Yeah. There was a bit of a pushing and shoving going on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, who would you like to see taking penalties?
I was thinking McAllister, but he doesn't seem to be playing. So. I mean, Mope, at least he seems quite composed with it, in that he took a pause, didn't he, and waited for the keeper to go and then put it down the middle. But I haven't really thought about it that much, to be honest. But
one presumes that they've actually sorted it out between them, and the given penalty taker is Mope, and if he's not in the pitch, that would be Gross, and if it's not him, before last week it would have been Dale Stevens. Murray obviously gone as well. So Mopar seems to be the first one, and Gross the second one is what seems to be the case.
Mm. Okay. Well, I mean, it was we said it was a quick start, and then in the seventh minute we did make it two, but it did go to VAR.
This is the weird thing, AD. The linesman didn't put his flag up. If he thought that Trossard was offside, then he should have put it up as soon as he received the ball, but he didn't. I think he assumed that Mopai was offside, and you could clearly see, in fact, it was a lot clearer from the replays that I wasn't sure about Trossard, but Mopai, it was clear that he wasn't offside. That was a bizarre one, that was.
But Brian?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It was, when you put it like that, exactly. I mean, it didn't look offside at the time, but obviously the flag goes up, and these days you just wonder, don't you? Still got that hope of VAR, but with it being on TV as well, you can see quite quickly that it was going to stand. And again, Lamptey involved, making that incursion, making that space, and just nicely Trossard with the assist. So he's produced, you know, he's producing every game as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we can't read too much into it, because obviously we're only two games into the season now. But I mean, we do seem to be shooting a lot more, and our shooting does seem to be a lot more accurate than it was previously.
Really? I think we still had a fair few shots that were clearing the crossbar, and they might only be by one or 2 feet rather than 6 or 7 feet. But you know, some of the shooting was still pretty wild.
Well, you know, I mean, a shot that hits the post is a class as a shot that's off target, isn't it? So
it's not on target. I'm just thinking, like Basuma one. They actually put it into the match of the day, into the replay stuff, Basuma's shot. But, you know, he was leaning back the whole time. All right, you know, it was good build-up. If you're going to show the good build-up, absolutely. But, you know, the shot itself, it was, you know, not brilliantly executed.
But, I mean, we've had, including the League Cup games, we've had quite a few different goal scorers already this season. I got laughs out of town when I suggested we're going to have three players.
We're still laughing, figures. Mate. We're still laughing.
Brian, what do you reckon? Three players and double figures this season?
That possibly low double figures. It could be like a sort of by committee, a sort of 10 or 11. Yeah, and that's fine. Yeah, I don't see... You might be right. Mope, you'd think, has got to get double figures.
Yes.
Connolly's off to a good start, hasn't he? He's finished last season. Yeah, you could be right. It's not something I've really analysed.
Lady, there is the mother of all pints for you if this comes off.
I mean, look, we all want it to happen. We're desperate for it to happen. But, I mean, the fact that goals are being shared around the team, and it's encouraging. It's been an encouraging start.
Sorry, they're being scored by the goal scorers, aren't they, in terms of the league? You're talking two for Mope, one for Connolly, one for Trossard, assuming that Adam Webster hasn't scored twice early on against Man United or something. But
there is that. Yeah.
Ali Rez has got two as well.
Yeah. I'm thinking league. I mean, certainly I thought Portsmouth were obviously poor. And
okay. Well, we'll talk about Ali Rez when we talk about Preston.
League Cup early rounds are a nice time to fill your boots, and then sometimes you hit Man U in the competition.
Yeah. Well, Connolly did make it three, as Brian said, and it was a beautiful curling finish. And
shades of his goal against Spurs, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be confident at the moment. I mean, I think he is a confidence player. And long may that continue. But I mean, I suspect that he might find himself on the bench again this weekend with Lallana coming back in, or maybe even Ali Reza. But we'll see what we already know never to second guess a Potter side, which is why Brian has to do it in the Argus.
I just can't get that graphic to work this season. I don't know what it is.
You say that. That's what it is. It's just the graphic.
Unfortunate, but there we go.
Okay, I mean, the only other real talking point in this game, apart from all the plaudits that Tarik was getting, and deservedly so.
Sorry, AD, before you go on to that, can I just say about Tarik Lamptey? We'll talk about obviously the thing that happened at the end of the game, but I've got to say, I was suggested by our good friend Jem Stone, who works for the BBC. He suggested that we do listen back to the BBC Five live commentary of that game, because it started off with, old Brighton have started well, and Brighton have started well, and Newcastle have got to do this and what have you. And then after 20 minutes, I think the penny dropped that Newcastle were dreadful and Brighton were really good that day. So when it came to Lamptey being substituted in the 58th minute, they kind of pre-announced it by saying, and Dan Burn's about to come on, blah, 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 a couple of other things, and up goes the board. And Ian Dennis, who was doing the commentary for Five Live, went, oh, no. As if to say...
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he went, oh, no. It's to say, because he said, and I want to. I can't because I'm a professional. I want to give him a standing ovation myself.
Yeah.
He couldn't do that. It was absolutely brilliant. He just went, oh, no. As if something terrible had happened. So,
a man of a match and only play 56 minutes.
Something ridiculous like that. But sorry, the Bissouma incident.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bissi, who he finished the season brilliantly. He started this season brilliantly.
He does have that moment of silliness in him, doesn't he?
Match of the day were arguing the point about whether that it wasn't a red card. I mean, I can't argue that it wasn't really. I mean, if that happened to one of our players, we'd be calling for it, wouldn't we? So,
I think what they were highlighting was the difference between what PG Moll said, which is the Referees Association, and IFAB, who are the people who make the rules. And I think the point he was making is that IFAB, I think that PG Moll is a bit clearer. They had a bit more clarity to IFAB's rules. And obviously, that's the way that the English football works. And I think that their way of saying it was is that that should have been a red card. I mean, Brian, can you make the case for it only being a yellow?
Not really. The one it reminded me a bit of was the Man United. Was it Nani, Man United, in the Champions League game? But I suppose he might not have known he was exactly there. But maybe you've got to be sure that nobody's there if you do that. Mm. I'm not... when I saw it, especially when you see them go over to the monitor, you think, unfortunately, he's going to be sent off. It was unfortunate. It's probably the best word for it. Even then, Brighton were the closest to scoring once or twice in the short period time that remained.
Yeah, so, we've been great so far this season, even in defeat against Chelsea. It was very encouraging. But away from home, that's now 9 unbeaten, which is fantastic. And back to back away league wins in the league as well.
So what was our last away league defeat then?
Bournemouth.
Yeah.
It was a run that looked unlikely when Brighton were 3-1 down at West Ham with about 20 minutes to go in January.
There is that.
How it started.
And that was a game we could have won.
Yeah, should have won it, really, yeah.
We've said it so many times last season, the amount of points we've left out on the pitch. But you are listening to the LBN Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast, which you now find on Spotify. This show, as ever, is brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. And I've sent over a rather wonderful shirt to the boys here. Brian, you've got it there, yeah?
I've got it on my phone. I'll have to pop over and get it. Yeah, I have got it though, but I can remember it was yellow with white dots.
This is one of the wonderful things of modern technology. I mean, we're recording this on Zoom. Brian seems to have I think he's throwing his laptop around, and so we've got him on mobile. Around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've got him looking like Chad, you know, what no Brian at the moment. So
I think the pale blue dots, actually, are they?
Oh, is it? Is it pale blue?
It's hard to say, it's yellow. Yellow. It's made by Hummel. There's big, the big white, maybe pale blue polka dots. The badge is yellow and green. It is very canary like, but it isn't Norwich City because it isn't.
It's kind of like if the King of the Mountains was leading the Tour de France and had a yellow jersey with spots on it.
Yeah. The green and yellow are sort of South Africa shades, the sort of Springbok shirt or something. But no, I didn't recognise it. And the badge...
Unless that badge has been photoshopped, I'm not convinced that's sort of Western writing either. So
no.
Something Arabic.
It's I don't know whether I like it or not.
It's horrible.
It's certainly different.
It's a
do you want to have it hazard a guess?
Oh, someone from the Middle East.
No, Brian.
I really don't know.
Okay. Let's see what Phil has to say about this one from oldfootballshirts.com, of course. And this is your shirt of the week. And Phil says, I would be gobsmacked and delighted if anyone guesses this one. And this is the 2004 to 2005 home shirt of Danish side FC Zulu. FC Zulu was a TV show broadcast in Denmark where a group of 16 nerds who had never played football were brought together to form a team. They were tasked with 3 months training with the goal of playing a match with an FC Copenhagen All-Stars team. Unbelievably, they played the game and they even scored a goal whilst losing 6-1. Then in 2006, a TV company collaborated with Swedish TV and they had a matchup. This time, FC Zulu came out 6-0 winners over FCZ Sweden. Since then, seven TV companies have taken part and FC Nerds, as it's become known, has formed teams in Norway, Finland, Germany, Holland, Spain, Hungary, Iceland, and even as far away as Australia. FC Zulu has now racked up victories over Swedish, FCZ Sweden, Norwegian, Tufte AL, and Spanish, Hakata FC, and various other teams. I reckon you could form the Albion Raw Nerds team, the Zulu Raw. What do you think? Get on the phone to Latest TV, says Phil. Yeah, okay, thanks for that.
Sounds like basically the football equivalent of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, something like that.
What was it? Dream Team, Harchester United, was it?
Everyone's
humping everyone else. And everyone's on the take and on the make. But this is FC Zulu. I think everyone should have Michael Caine's name written on the back.
Yeah, don't throw balls at me. Yeah,
that kind of thing. But anyway, thanks for that. Thanks for that, Phil. Listen, we are Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We are a community radio station, which, like everyone else in the coronavirus lockdown is suffering just as bad and as poorly as anyone. However, if you do feel that there are a couple of shekels that you've got left at the end of your payday that you might want to come our way, do go to radioreverb.com/donate and put in whatever you can. We do all these shows, and there are myriad shows on a variety of topics that the radio station covers for the community of Brighton and Hove and further afield. We've just got, a brand new transmitter, and we're just having that upgraded still, so hopefully we might even be able to get it in France. Now, that would be something we can undo thick then. And so that's coming online in the next few weeks. But if you do feel like donating towards this brilliant community project, please feel free to do so. We all do this free, gratis, for nothing. AD and I have been doing this for 13 years for nothing. We hope you enjoy what you do, and we hope you enjoy everything that Reverb puts out. But if you could chuck us a few shekels, that would be absolutely brilliant.
Okay, so the other big news this week is, of course, that we have lost Dale Stevens, who has gone back to his native Northwest. We'd like to wish him good luck, but he's gone to Burnley. But I mean, Al, you've written a very eloquent piece for you. Well done.
Eloquent anytime I feel like. Thank you very much.
it was a wonderful piece that you've in tribute to Dale. But Brian, I mean, obviously he's a player that you've spoken to several times over his years with the club. So tell us what you think about Dale Stevens.
Well, I think his departure is really interesting, because I must admit, even up until quite recently, I think most of us still thought he would play quite a lot in the Premier League for Brighton. He's just been there for so long, hasn't he? And he's been, I think him and Kyle, they both officially part of company this summer, just how key they were in the whole Chris Hughton thing of turning Brighton around and being able to play with two wide men and two up front, because he trusted those two. I mean, there was a time when Kyle and Stevens weren't playing that if one of them was missing, it was, you know, major problem. But he's just been a huge part in the club, huge part in that day at Middlesbrough. But I'm really interested that he's been allowed
to... You read my notes.
Oh, right. Just interesting that he's been allowed to go. I mean, the other thing, I just remember he always used to score up in the Northwest when the Northwest was Wigan, Bolton, Blackburn and not Man United, Man City.
Yeah, well, his first game for us came in a 3-3 draw at Ewood Park. Can you remember who the other goal scorers were that day?
David Rodriguez opened the can.
Yes, he did.
In his phrase. And then Gordon Greer with a dainty flick?
It was Gordon Greer, but Dale's goal...
Dainty?
It was a dainty little flick at the near post.
Yeah, but Dale's goal was an 88-minute equaliser. Well, I mean, it's fair to say, Brian...
AD, you have to go back further than that for Dale Stevens' impact on the Albion. I certainly remember before he arrived, he was playing for Charlton and scored directly from a corner against us.
Yeah, it was given... it was given as an own goal, I think.
Was it? And the other thing about it is the embarrassment. I don't want to sort of like, you know, go on too much about it, but you know, because it's the same bloke as Ben White, his transfer from Charlton to Brighton cost the Albion an extra £90,000 in a fine. It's not Dale Stevens' fault, obviously, but his representation were less than forthcoming. It's the same representation as Ben White, were less than forthcoming about their particular role and their duty. It cost the Albion didn't sort of particularly do all their due diligence that they should have done, and got stung for a fine for that. I mean, like I say, it's not Dale Stevens' fault, but it's just kind of an interesting way to arrive at a club.
Yeah, but I mean, Brian, I mean, it's certainly here at Raw Towers, Dale's been the player that's been very much appreciated by us, because we see what he does. But it'd be fair to say that he's a bit Marmite with some people.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. I found he was quite an understated in a way, I suppose, the role that he played. He was one of those I found hard to do the player ratings for when I had to do it right on full time. And although he's been out there, you notice the defenders and you notice the strikers and the wingers, but maybe not. But the central midfield. But I mean, he always played, didn't he? He was a key player, even early last season. Not that early, but it's a few weeks into last season, Graham Potter was saying that he'd probably been one of the best, if not the best, Brighton player. I'll say but it was not that early because it had a body of evidence to look at. So and that was the difference. I think Shane Duffy, you know, with all these promotion winners now moving on and it's the end of an era, but Shane Duffy, I think, was probably not expected to play that much. Glenn Murray was not expected to play that much, but maybe not so much expected to move on as well. So I think Dale Stevens, was it 28 starts last season out of 38? I don't think it would have been a surprise. I mean, it's a bold move in a way when you see, you know, there are young midfield players and Potter is now talking about this is a chance for young midfield players to, you know, more of a platform. So they don't need to go out and sign anybody. So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised that he went, but you can sort of see, you know, you can see why. But six.
But, I mean, you were talking about doing the player ratings there, Brian. And I mean, the thing with Dale was, you notice him more when he wasn't there.
Yeah, or when he wasn't, when he did something wrong. A pass, for example, that put a team in trouble, or I'm not saying that happened very often, but it would probably be that while he was there doing his job, doing his efficient bits and pieces, he was less noticeable. I just wonder, you know, that the speed with which the ball is passed, it's just gone up a little bit. Was there times when he took one extra touch when you look at it and compare him with some other players? But, you know,
those championship years. I think you've got a completely valid point there, Brian. I mean, the point I was making in my rare bounce of eloquence was that I felt that he left midfield in better shape than he found it. And by that, I mean, I think, like you say, when you've seen the midfield playing without Dale Stevens at the moment, it's not as though there's a Stevens-shaped hole there. There is something different. There is, you know, even with the younger players, they're playing with an awful lot less fear. You're right about Stevens taking that touch. He'll look up. Listen, this is a fella who rarely gave the ball away, irrespective of what other people said, but he recycled.
I know a song about that.
And he... Yeah, I know, but it's not always true. But, you know, when you're talking about the partnerships, you're talking about Stevens-Kyle, we're talking about Stevens and Sidwell, which was largely the one in our promotion year, then later Stevens and Prupper. And they are kind of very similar. In each case, each player was slightly similar, you know, quite similar. So in that sense, we were going to lose either Stevens or Prupper on account of the fact that our midfield is pretty much brand new. I think that what Brian's alluding to is there still would have been a space for Dale Stevens, you know, if we really wanted for him to stay. But, you know, if this is a player who is too good, frankly, actually to be bench warming. So, yeah, you know,
exactly. I mean, he's 31. He's 31 years old. He wants to be playing. At his age, he wants to be playing week in, week out, which we couldn't guarantee him here this season. We alluded to it on our previous show that we thought that Stevens might be one of the ones that would be moving on.
Prupper is actually a more of a Potter type player than Stevens is.
Mm. Even he may find his up his.
Yeah, I think Prupper will stay. Sorry, Brian, you were going
to
say?
I was going to say, I didn't think he passed the ball that well at Preston the other night on a consistent basis. Although he had some highlight moments you will have seen on the, if you'd watched that, you know, the best pieces of it.
Yeah.
Ben White in that role, is that on some, does he come into contention?
He played that role a couple of times for Leeds and won plaudits there, which could possibly see Veltman come in and play at centre back this weekend. I mean, it's Graham Potter. I mean,
Graham Potter is a sort of bloke that if he felt it was right, he'd stick Matty Ryan up front.
Absolutely. But I mean, it's he's a player that, you know, he's been wonderful for us. It's 223 appearances, 15 goals.
Listen, AD. Let's put this all in perspective. One could argue, and we had Ralph Brown on the show last week saying this, and I think kind of quite well from a sort of more distant perspective, saying this is one of the best Brighton signs he's ever known. And you have to compare it to who we're playing against. You know, we can say that we had some great Brighton signs of the past, but they weren't playing in the top division. So we're now playing in the top division, and at times taking on and beating the big boys. Not all of them, but, you know, now and again we're doing it. We're certainly competing with it. So you have to be aware of the qualities of the people that we've got at the moment. And Dale Stevens did not look out, and for the fact he's going to another Premier League club, does not look out of his depth in a Premier League side. But that said, he was kind of, you know, the first, arguably the first, one of the first pieces of the jigsaw that we signed to actually get promotion. And we are talking about a side which took, you know, it took us 6 years to get promoted from the start of the Amex to that game against Wigan. But I think that probably you could say that it really started motoring when you saw that a midfield dynamo like Dale Stevens, who kept the ball alive, kept it rotated, kept it going. Yeah, his role was high risk. Yeah, he had an engine to work a lot. You know, his was the heartbeat, the engine, the soul of the team out there. And the fact that the people didn't see, and it's fine if Murray's going to, or Rojoa, or Baldock is going to score the goals. It's fine if Knockhart is going to win the flair stuff and show off. And I think probably Dale Stevens is probably happy to be under the radar in that way. But that is very, very far from saying that he did nothing for us, or, you know, people would drive him up there for, you know, you have to bear in mind, I do put him alongside the likes of Brian Horton and Danny Wilson and Jimmy Case as our great midfielder leaders. And I'm struggling to think of anyone, you know, if you name that Albion 11, at the very least, he'd be there or thereabouts of all the players I've seen over the past 40 years.
I think history will suit him well.
Absolutely. And I hope a lot better than he does now.
And just because we never bore of talking about this here on the Albion Raw, we're going to talk about the red card at Middlesbrough, because it still annoys everybody and cost us promotion, possibly. But it wasn't his fault. It wasn't red card.
Well, actually, I mean, this is the weird thing. Is we said this on the Raw at the time. Well, I said it on the Raw at the time. And I think that possibly these things aren't... There is an element of fate about this. Is that that particular season where we just missed out on promotion by a gnat's arse, is that I didn't think that we were actually ready for promotion, because the previous season we'd been horrible. We nearly got relegated. We had to bring Houghton in, you know, to undo Hoopier's work. And then we started that particular season, 20-odd games undefeated, and I couldn't help feeling there was a sort of a touch of a bubble about it. There was still something missing. So the fact that we didn't get promotion that season, I actually genuinely felt at the time, and I do feel it now, is that it was a little bit of a blessing.
So Mike Dean did us a favour, is that what you're saying?
It reinforced... No, I mean, that seems to presume that we'd have definitely gone on to win, and we don't know that, but no.
Dale did score in that game, though.
Yes, well, obviously he did score, but we still needed a winning goal. But it reinforced to me that, you know, that extra season of doing it again, effectively, you've done it once, lads, now go and do it again. That, for me, actually created a stronger spine, a stronger mentality for when we finally did go up.
Well, the fact that the first thing we did after that defeat was to give Chris Hughton another contract.
Brian, you were going to say?
No, I was going to say Middlesbrough came straight back down, didn't they? So they weren't. They just could have a debate about the validity of the phrase "must win game" out of all that. I mean, that was a must win game at the time, but was it now?
I still look at it and thinking I'm actually reasonably grateful. I genuinely didn't think we were ready for the Premier League. I thought there were still too many gaps, too big a leap for us to make, for us to be that Championship promoted side to a Premier League. It was that extra season of consolidation that we needed.
Yeah, with hindsight, but you're right. But and also the thing with Stevens as well, you say when he wasn't there, I'm pretty sure he didn't play when Sammy Hippier, he was out injured for the entirety of Sammy Hippier's tenure.
He was, wasn't he? I was looking at his stats on that, and he didn't play very much that season at all. But okay, well, like I said, I'd like to wish him well, but he's gone to Burnley, so we wish him well when he leaves Burnley, inevitably. The Northwest, another team in the Northwest, which is, of course, Preston North End, a place we've never, ever won until now, Brian. 17 attempts of winning there, and we finally got a win. And you were there.
I was, yeah. It's still, in a way, it almost felt like it doesn't fully count because nobody else was there and it was the League Cup, etc. It wasn't a proper league, you know, winning in the Championship in front of 10 or 12,000 and a few hundred from Albion. But as wins go, really impressive, fairly even in the first half. Well, people probably pay £10 and watch the stream, some of your avid listeners. But they were getting on top at the end of the first half and just so impressive in the second half. Really outclassed, I suppose, is the right word, for a Preston team, which is pretty strong, although they too did make changes. I should...
They made nine changes. We made 11. There was a full debut for Max Sanders and a start for the Leeds linked Hayden Roberts, because Leeds don't... they know we're a breeding ground for good...
Hang on, so Leeds are now going... They failed to get our sixth best centre back, so they're now going for our ninth best.
Something like that. Brian,
what happened? What changed? Assuming it wasn't a massive change of personnel, what changed between the first and second half for you?
They were getting on top late in the first half anyway. So it was early on. There was a few crosses and a few set pieces coming into the box, which Brighton survived. But there was one very good save by Jason Steele after a little bit of hesitation between two of the Brighton players. I think Max Sanders might have been one, a little misunderstanding.
Dan Byrne was the one that was really standing off on that.
Yeah. That was a very good save, and they hit the bar from the top of the bar from the corner. But I thought Brighton should have been ahead at half time. There was that one with Alexis McAllister who could have finished or could have teed up Victor in the middle and didn't quite manage either.
Ali had a chance as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful slide rule pass from McAllister there as well.
Yeah, and I was just... it was just because obviously it's an empty stadium. You've just got that sort of soundtrack that I could hear all evening of the gentle thud of a Brighton boot controlling the ball and the less gentle thud of him passing. There was that just thud, 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 that sort of noise all night as they passed the ball around on a sort of immaculate surface. And I suppose what changed was... you wondered if they were going to get the goal that the football deserved or create the chances from the football. And what changed was Jahan Baksh in form, in confidence, perfectly struck, because it wasn't the best cross, but a perfectly perfect connection on the shot.
I think what actually really changed, I mean, we dropped Gross a little bit deeper. I do need to point out as well, obviously in the absence of... Dale Stevens on this one. It was actually Pascal Gross who took the armband, which is interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I think a good choice as well. Actually, I think he does tend to lead by example. And
it's those pinball eyes, AD. They scare anyone.
Yeah, but I mean, he dropped it. They wanted to get Pascal on the ball a little bit more, and which is what he actually did. And Ali Reza, at the moment, like you said, he's in a bit of form.
He certainly closed his eyes and just swung his foot, didn't he?
But he's got a foot like a traction engine now.
Yeah. Well, he got it on top. I mean, apparently the keeper turned around, expected to go and fetch it from the seats, and it was nestling in the back of the net. But it was nice little interplay as well before that. I thought McAllister was going to have a go in the move when he cut inside onto the right foot and then opted not to. But it just rewards Brighton were, you know, on top throughout that second half, really.
I mean, we played some really, really lovely football there. And but I mean, obviously a lot of people are saying this is our second string side. All of these players have played in the first team last year. I mean, out of the team that started on Wednesday, Brian. Who's really knocking on the door?
I think somebody said, I mean, all the time the others are playing as they are, it's difficult for any of them to be. But I wonder if, for example, Veltman, they've kicked off already, haven't they? But I would have thought Veltman for United, maybe, or if not, coming up quite soon. He will be, and people are going to drop out. We've already seen a red card for Bissouma. People, they're not going to keep that team, you know, consistently. Pascal Gross, you would have thought, would feature again. I don't know, striker-wise, if Victor's, you know, the man. But
ask you about Victor Gyökeres, because, you know, he spent last season on loan at St. Pauli. He's got a few headlines for the under-23s, for the Premier League 2 side. And he's been knocking on the door of the first team. And he's done quite well on a couple of occasions. But he's a little bit of an enigma at the moment, isn't he?
I thought he was better against Preston than he was against Portsmouth, even though Preston was stronger. He was a stronger opposition. As a target man, he got on the ball and held it and brought others into play more. He is a a younger, more mobile Glenn Murray in that sort of interplay, not maybe the veteran finishing, but even that finish against Portsmouth was a real sort of centre forward.
Classy, wasn't it?
Yeah, so you think there's something there. I'm not sure that it's going to be, even if it's the best thing to stay with the Premier League team once this cup run is over throughout. But you think there was something there. And also, I mean, he played wide when he was in that good under-23s team with Connolly. It was the other way around to what you might think, because Connolly was the central player, and wherever I saw Victor, he was wide left. So he's one of those.
And that's where he was playing when he was given his rare opportunities in the first team as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But I think he was centre forward for Sampaoli. So he's got that sort of versatility, which Potter pretty much demands. I mean, the way he was talking, not so much what we saw in the game, but in the press conference, you think Hayden Roberts he's got pretty big plans for him. I mean, I've been told that they're not going to loan him out. He's going to stay there.
And really? So really?
So you just don't know who's going to come through out of those teams. I mean, Max Sanders obviously did pretty well in midfield.
Brian, I didn't see the game. So tell us about, I've heard about the praise for Sanders. So tell us about what you saw.
Sort of pretty much what we said about Dale Stevens for a few minutes. It was get on the ball and keep it simple and being the, again, if he misplaced the pass, you noticed it because it didn't. He went for one sort of really ambitious diagonal to try and get a winger away on one point, and it went out for a throw-in, and you could see it sort of disappointed with it. But he sort of keep the ball moving and tidy and in there alongside sort of more deep line alongside Davy Proper, and they had Jahan Bakhsh, McAllister and Pascal Gross in the first half, certainly, as the more, you know, moving around off Gyökeres.
Is it the case that you think that Jason Malumbi is ahead of him in the queue, or are we talking about different positions here?
I would have thought Malumbi is a bit more. Yeah, so there could be the subtle differences in how they play, but they're both sort of central midfielders. Malumbi strikes me as a bit more aggressive, a bit more sort of tenacious. Yeah. But yeah, he's ahead in the queue. We might know that.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've got Gyökeres who's being linked with a loan move. It was to Coventry. I don't know if they're still looking. Sanders obviously was out on loan last year. Could he?
I think if Gyökeres is going to succeed, he's got to go on loan in England, I think.
Yeah, in the Championship. He's got to have a good season in the Championship, a la Malumbi, White.
Clark.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, Matt Clark.
Well, Ostergaard's at Coventry already, who was on loan with him at St Pauli last year. So maybe.
Swansea are the club who've come out, you know, quite open. It seems to be the one that's come out into the open who are interested in him. But it's quite a long window, isn't it? By the time you get past the 5th of October and then into the sort of supplementary window. So,
the supplementary window, for those who don't know, basically, so the Premier League window closes on the 5th of October. But then there's another week after that for Football League clubs to pick up anyone who's left, basically.
And I think that goes on to
it's kind of like a supermarket sweep afterwards.
I think that goes on to the 22nd of October, so it's still got a month to go yet.
Yeah, but let's just talk about Alexis McAllister then. It was a good goal for him, arriving late in the box to sweep home, which is something which has been missing from the first team. That midfielder arriving late into the box to pick up that second ball, or to pick up that the ball into the box, basically. Well, it's something which is certainly a player that's exciting people at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, you think there's a lot more to come than what we, or you hope there's a lot more to come than what we've seen. I mean, Potter said, didn't he, after that, because he did that twice, that late arrival a la Brian Robson or somebody in prime. He did that against Portsmouth for a header, and he did that one. Basically, you can see all the movement off the ball. There's Pascal Gross sold the Cruyff turn and made room to get to the byline. The defender didn't move and McAllister was moving. And probably it was the same for Portsmouth. So, I mean, Potter said that he sees that a lot in training, that when Jahan Bakhsh stood that ball up against Pompey towards the far post, he saw McAllister coming in. That, you know, he's seen it so often and that was going to be a goal. So it's, getting in those positions. But he's not getting inside at the moment, is he? So it's just... Yeah. It's a long season. Chances will appear.
Well, these League Cup games are coming thick and fast. And we now know we're going to be facing Manchester United in the next round on Wednesday, which is going to be live on Sky.
Who knew?
Who knew? But well, Man United on the telly. Who knew? But yeah, absolutely. But it's I mean, it's another opportunity. I mean, we've never gone past this round, so
we have once. We have. We've got to the fifth round, which is the quarterfinal. We got to there in 1979, and for those who remember it, I think the club put on a Seagull special trains to go to Nottingham, and they never made it. Then I think a lot of them didn't even make it out of Brighton Station. I'm sure that those who are listening to this, those who were there, and we are talking 40 years ago, they can remember that. Put down on Facebook or put down on Twitter your memories of that day where you were supposed to be going to the League Cup quarterfinal against, let's face it, the European champion elect.
I do remember, not going, but I remember when we were doing one of our live shows with Chris Catlin, I think it was, and there's some brilliant... show world. They all watched it. The people who couldn't go, they put on a show and they showed the highlights of the, in a cinema, and something all the players like were there.
There was a lot of people. I couldn't remember why the train didn't make it out of Brighton Station, but yeah. So let us know if you were there on that day. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter as to what actually happened that day of the quarter final in 1979 against Forest.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously,
yes, we have made it that far.
But I mean, obviously, Man United right now as well. In the league and obviously in the League Cup.
Well, they're not going to put out a particularly strong side, are they? So,
this is the thing in this competition now. The teams have actually been putting out really strong teams so far.
Yeah, I mean, United made 10 changes last week at Luton with Maguire as the only one surviving. But as you say, it's still a strong team. And they put some, I think Bruno Fernandes went on as sub, Rashford, was it? So, I mean... It's not going to be... maybe squads are stronger than they used to be in the Alex Ferguson days anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's you know, our second string, as you call it, second string 11, is not that bad. I mean, I don't know. It's... Given that the Premier League is... I know that success in the Premier League is far more important for Man United, but actually survival in the Premier League is equally vital for us. Yeah, there'll be changes, but we've got effectively two squads at the moment, one playing in the league, one playing in the League Cup, who, you know, I suspect we'll see a similar side playing on Wednesday. Is it a home? Is it a home again?
Yeah, it's a home. Yeah. And it takes up Basuma's suspension.
Yes, it does.
And they say he will now be available for the game at Everton. So, it's exciting times. So, I mean, I remember getting Man United in any competition was exciting, but it just seems to be
bored of
the girl these days, but which is tells you exactly how far we've come. We've come such a long way in this show that we've come to the end of it, in fact. So I would like to say thank you to Alan Wes, thank you to Brian Owen. I've been A.D. Packham. This has been the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. This old house wants new children. This old house wants new wife. This old house was home of comfort as we focused on life. This old house wants brand new laughter. This old house heard many shots. Now she trembles in the dark, and that's the way the lame and the world's louder. This old house is getting old. This old house lets in the rain. This old house lets in the cold.